Well, if you've had a baby or been a baby, you've probably been impacted by Dr. T. Barry Brasselton. They call him the baby whisperer, and he changed the way we think about infants through 6 decades of practice, including many years at Boston Children's Hospital and with his long-running cable program, What Every Baby Knows. Building off the work of his hero, Dr. Benjamin Spock, Brasselton theorized that infants can communicate and parents can be guided to anticipate their needs through a roadmap Brasselton called Touchpoints. From famed British Dr. D.W. Winnicott, he took the importance of the childhood experience of parents, something Selma Freyberg later named ghosts in the nursery. Dr. Brasselton is now 95. 95, can that be? And he's written a memoir. It's called Listening to Children, A Life Caring for Children. In effect, it's a history of childcare, and aren't we lucky? Dr. Brasselton lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and he joins us in the studio. So nice to see you.
Thank you, Robin. It's wonderful to see you.
And we're also joined by your longtime colleague, psychiatrist Josh Sparrow. He's here as well. Josh, welcome to you.
Thank you, Robin.
You write about something called ghosts in the nursery. What's a ghost in the nursery?
The ghost is something from your past. It keeps haunting you and dominates what you do.
You may not even know it. It may be something
that
happened in your childhood, and it's impacting how you raise kids, but you may not even know it.
So one of the things I used to do in my practice was to get people to talk about what their past had been.
Well, and this idea of even talking to parents, let alone talking to them in the way that psychologists or psychiatrists like Josh might do, was unbelievably new. Just tell us a little bit about how the role of the parent has changed.
Well, when I started, and it's happened again now, people were just sort of run through like they were on a conveyor belt. But I went into pediatrics because I love kids. I wanted to get inside their brains. I very quickly realized that I couldn't do it unless I understood what their parents saw in them. So I began to try to like parents. And since I'd had a mother that liked my brother but not me, that's one of the ghosts.
Right.
I had a hard time liking parents, but when I finally did, I found that they could tell me so much. And I found out that even in the first 2 or 3 months, a child used his behavior as his language.
So you said a couple things here. You said that you brought parents into the process, and parents weren't even allowed in the hospital when their children were in the hospital, except for maybe a couple hours.
That's right. I changed it at the Children's in 1970 because people weren't allowed to be with their child but 2 hours every Saturday afternoon. Now you can be with them all day.
Right. Move them right in. But you just, as you said, mentioned one of your ghosts. Tell us a little bit about where you came from. Waco, Texas. A grandfather who tried to protect a young black boy from being lynched. And so the Ku Klux Klan would make visits to your home in Waco. Mm-hmm. Your dad had hyperthyroidism, so he had mood shifts until he got medication, but your mom became distracted by his health. You use another phrase, gatekeeping. You say she kept you from having a relationship with your father, something you call gatekeeping.
Well, it's something that everybody has. What you do unconsciously is try to get the child to pay more attention to you than to the other parent.
This is when you recognize gatekeeping in parents. But as you say, your own mother was sort of gatekeeping you from her husband.
My father.
Yeah, and then also gatekeeping you from your brother. Mm-hmm. How did these things, these ghosts in your nursery, make you the doctor that you are?
Well, I think the main thing I try to do is get people aware that they all have it. Mm. And once you do that, parents say, oh, that's what I've been doing.
I'm going to bring in your colleague, Josh Sparrow, Dr. Joshua Sparrow, a psychiatrist, because Dr. Brasselton, you would develop something called the Neonatal Behavioral Assessment Scale, sort of a roadmap of how infants really were developing and really did have certain signposts that people could look for. Before that, they were just kind of seen as these little blobs. And then later developed a roadmap for children's development. What kind of impact do you think Dr. Brasselton had?
I think Dr. Brasselton really helped us set off a scientific revolution in the way that we view children. Before the Neonatal Behavioral Assessment Scale, the way that we looked at newborns was by putting them naked at birth on a cold stainless steel tray and poking them and testing their reflexes. So all we saw was that they did a lot of crying and looked pretty upset. And what Dr. Brazelton realized was that you can't really tell what's going on with anyone, even a newborn, unless you give them optimal conditions to show them, show us what they really can do. So in his scale, he looks at what each newborn needs to be able to be comfortable enough to show us the amazing competencies of newborns. And that really changed the way that we think about newborns. It's changed the way that we care for newborns, and it's changed our ability to distinguish between individual differences in babies from birth.
Dr. Brazelton, you say the two questions that underline all others that parents have for you are, how am I doing as a parent, and is my child developing well?
Mm-hmm. I use a baby to capture parents right from the first. I can do this with even drug-addicted parents or abusing parents by demonstrating how the baby will choose the mother's voice rather than mine and the father's voice. And every father I've ever done it with just grabs that baby and says, "Oh my God, he knows me already." Yeah. And he's a person. Yeah. And they begin to see this baby completely differently right from the first.
Yeah. What was the benefit of touch points, Dr. Sparrow?
So touch points came from Dr. Brazelton's practice. He spent 50 years seeing 25,000 patients, and he began to notice some patterns, and he could actually predict why a parent would call him up when their child was a certain age. A parent of a four-month-old would routinely call up to say, "My baby has stopped feeding." Nothing is worse than feeling like they're failing at nurturing their fragile young child who's completely dependent on them. But he realized it was because at 4 months of age, babies suddenly are able to see much further away than the typical 12 or 18 inches, which makes it so they just focus on the parent's face when they're feeding. So they get distracted.
And as Josh says, at 4 months, their visual acuity changes and they want to look around at the world. And the simple thing that I found was that if you cut lights down, babies would stop and start feeding again. Mm. And so I'd tell parents, you know, it's simple. Just turn the light down. They'd call me and say, "Oh, my God, that was so simple."
Well, but the overarching thinking is that there will be regressions before this surge in development.
Mm-hmm. And up till that point, we were taught children develop in a straight line, but they don't. They take these spurts in development, then level off and consolidate them. Just before each spurt, there's a regression. Parents fall apart with the child, and if you give them the support they need, when they take the next spurt, they think, "Oh my God, that was so easy."
T. Barry Brazelton, pediatrician to much of America for the past 50 years, now out with a memoir. We've also been speaking with psychiatrist Josh Sparrow, his sometime co-author and colleague. We're going to take a break and hear more from both. And by the way, we'd love to hear either your questions to the doctor or thoughts about his contribution to your life as a parent or as a baby. You can do that at hereandnow.org. And by the way, we said at the top of the program that the Salvation Army building has collapsed in Philadelphia. We'll have a report on that as well in a bit. Back in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back to our conversation with pediatrician T. Barry Brazelton. At the age of 95, he's out with a memoir of decades of working to change the way we see babies and parents through many books, a TV show, and in the 1990s, a roadshow, traveling with colleagues like child psychiatrist Joshua Sparrow, speaking to parents. And Dr. Sparrow is here in the studio with us as well. You may have noticed that this year, Dr. Brazelton received the 2012 Presidential Citizens Medal. It's awarded to those who have performed exemplary deeds of service for their country or their fellow citizens. But Dr. Brazelton also traveled the world and discovered that babies and parents are different around the world. For instance, in Japan's Goto Islands, pregnant women sit quietly mending fishing nets so their babies are very quiet when they're born, and Dr. Brazelton couldn't use the same rattle techniques to test their responses. He had to be very quiet with them. But then also on the Goto Islands, babies and their mothers are put to bed for 30 days after childbirth. The mothers are encouraged to regress. They're babied as much as their infants. And Dr. Brazelton says this is why there's not one case of postpartum depression on those islands. And Dr. Brazelton, tell us more. You also give examples of countries where children are carried until they're old enough to just walk, or they just skip crawling altogether.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Africa, for instance, if you pull a newborn up to sit by pulling on his arms, mm-hmm. he won't sit. He'll come straight up to stand. Like, wow, there's the world. I want to conquer it. Babies in Africa were walking by 7 months of age.
Why is that? Because here we have a whole cottage industry to get your child between crawling and walking.
What? I know. It's so simple. And the baby will do it for himself. I found that if you allowed these babies at 3 and 4 years old to walk, they'll learn anything. But if you sat them down, they wouldn't learn a damn thing.
So you observed in African cultures that babies would stand sooner and perhaps should be standing when learning. Well, you formed a pack to push for parental leave. What do you think about working mothers?
Well, at first I didn't feel mothers ought to work at all.
Yeah.
And I thought they ought to stay home with their babies for at least a year. And my three daughters said, Dad, you're in the last century. For God's sake, catch up. Mothers have to work these days. Mm-hmm. And so I began to look at it, and of course they did. And so now I think mothers ought to work if they feel like they should. And they also ought to be given at least 4 months leave, and we ought to pay for it.
You think 4 months is enough for the bonding that I know you'd want to see happen?
I think it's the start.
Why do you love babies so much?
I don't know. I just always have. I was in Croatia after that nightmare over there, and this psychologist who was working with all these children who'd watched their parents raped and murdered and hung came and said, I'm so depressed, Dr. B. How in the world do you keep yourself from burning out? And I thought about it. I said, I don't know why. I never thought about burning out. Then I said, yes, I do. I go and play with a newborn baby, and I see how exciting a baby can be and what that baby can tell us about himself, and he'll lead us right out of our burnout.
What's the one, maybe more than one, but what are the basic things you would want to say to new parents?
Well, that they have a hunger to become the optimal parent for that baby. And I'd like for them to learn that they can understand that baby by watching the baby's behavior to reinforce them at each stage of development. One of our tenets in our touch points work is looking for the positives rather than the negatives. When you tell a parent what to do, their face falls and they don't hear anything you say. If you say, now tell me what you're doing because you're doing such a wonderful job. Tell me what you'd like to do and what you'd like for me to tell you that might help you. And from that point, parents open up and they'll tell you everything.
It reminds me of a story you tell, because you also say that one of the things that doctors need to do is turn negative passion that they see into positive passion. And you talk about coming across a mom who's just losing it with a 2-year-old who's been acting out, and she starts hitting him in public. You said to the mother, oh, it's so hard, isn't it?
Uh-huh. I think what you said was, it's so hard to take a 2-year-old to the grocery store.
That's right.
More specific.
Yeah.
She began crying and holding her child.
And as soon as she did, the child began to be positive, too.
Yeah. You say that the two-year-old climbed up into her lap and started wiping her tears.
That's right.
I've heard the story a few times.
I think you should wander around grocery stores more. Dr. Sparrow, what do you think that Dr. Brazelton's contribution has been to people like you, to child care providers, to parents, to our sense of infants?
I think Dr. Brazelton showed the world that babies are individual people from the very beginning.
Everything flows from there.
Yeah, that's right.
Have you held a baby lately?
I'd like to.
I bet you would.
Have you got one?
We'll go find one for you. Dr. Brazelton, thanks so much.
Well, this is great, Robin. It's great to see you.
And great to see you, too, and psychiatrist Josh Sparrow. So again, if you have questions for Dr. Brazelton, or thanks, or maybe some of his advice did not work out, send it all at toherenow.org, and we will make sure he gets it. Quick note on another story we're following today. The Susan G. Komen Foundation has canceled its signature three-day 60-mile walk in seven cities, citing economic uncertainty and competition from other charities. Participation in the walks had fallen after founder Nancy Brinker announced a plan to fight to eliminate funding for Planned Parenthood. There was a backlash. Her decision was reversed, but now donations have dropped, and organizers say they will cancel their walk in Chicago, Cleveland, Tampa Bay, San Francisco, Boston, Phoenix, and Washington, D.C. We'll have more of the latest news coming up here and now.